All right.
So now we're in Isaiah, and we're in the back room. Anything goes. So if you guys have any questions, we'll have conversations. If I could sit down, I would, but it's not going to work for me to sit down. I'll try to have a lot of handouts as we go through it and material. But because I want you, even though we're going through this study in 12 weeks, and I'm saying 12 because we have 13, but I don't know if I might be gone one, so it might be 12, might be 11. Even though we're going through it in 12 weeks, I want you to really know the book of Isaiah when you're done. If we spent a week on every chapter, of course, that's 66 weeks. That's over a year, right? And we could do that, but it's almost too exhausting. You'd just be weary and tired after that. So I think this is an ambitious schedule, but a lot of other people have done it before me, you know, a 12, 13-week study. So I think you'll enjoy it. Of course, we can't study every chapter in detail, but we're going to break it down into sections, and I'll show you that more fully next week. If you're interested, there's a great commentary by Homer Haley written on the Isaiah. This guy was just an excellent student on the Old Testament and the prophets. Some of you might know him personally. Ann and I had the pleasure to have him in our house more than once, and just an excellent, excellent student. There's a 3-series set. This is volume 1 by Edward Young. If you really want something detailed. But a lot of this stuff's on the internet, too. You can go to a Bible study site like Bible Gateway, Bible Hub, and they have commentaries that you can read on any book. And so that's really helpful as well. All right. So then also I gave you that big handout. Let me get it. This is from Mark Copeland's Executable Outlines. And it's just his introductory material. And if you notice on the second page, third page, there's questions at the bottom there. On the bottom it says page 5. That's actually page 3 for you. You might work on those, and then notice this, after that, we have a worksheet just on the first chapter. And I would ask you to actually go through this material and try to answer those questions, and that will prepare you for next week, okay? And that's...
You're saying answer these questions and then answer these other ones?
Well, yeah, the last two pages have to do with chapter 1. The first two pages are the introduction.
Oh.
All right? So I really want you to do the last two pages, chapter 1. And then what it says on the top of the page, it says the book of Isaiah, introduction to the what? Entire prophecies, either one, that means chapter 1. Okay.
Those questions.
Yeah, if you can. Okay? And there's no right or wrong. It just gets you immersed in the book. Okay, so when we look at Isaiah, we're going to just introduce it today because as with many of the prophets, you really have to know the background to understand what's going on. And if we don't know the background, it's going to be very hard to stay on top of things. So, first of all, the word Isaiah means salvation from the Lord. Now, see how the W or YHWH, what does that stand for when you see it? YHWH, what does that stand for?
Yahweh.
That's how they write it in English letters, because the Hebrew letters you couldn't read, but the Hebrew has no vowels. They're just consonants, all right? But Y is a vowel for us, isn't it? So they don't know how the word is pronounced. The American Standard wrote it this way, Jehovah. See that? There's the H, the W becomes a V, and the H is there. They put in the vowels there, Jehovah. Now, but we don't know if that's correct or not. But this is God's covenant name. When you see the word YHWH, you always think Yahweh. And a lot of people write it in when you read literature or study material. A lot of people on the radio refer to it. It's God's covenant name. Now, the reason that's important is because God is a God. That shows what he is. Like, Marvin is a, let's put him over here. Here's Marvin. What is Marvin?
Human or?
A human, yeah.
Human.
That means human. This God means what? Divine. That's not his name. We refer to him as God, but it's like, oh, hey, human. But we do that. We go, hey, man, or hey, guys. And we use guys for both men and women, which is just so peculiar to me. But girls talking to girls, hey, guys, let's go. But that's what we do. That's not his name, all right? And now sometimes he's referred to as Lord. Now, what is that?
With capital, you mean?
Even small. Capital O-L, but small O-R-D. What does that refer to? Is that his name?
That's who he is.
No, that's his title.
Yeah.
Like president, he is Lord, right? Lord God Almighty. He, Lord means what? Master, right? So, and Marvin, someone might call him a husband. Or they might call him sir. Or they might call him, hey, boss. Those are all what? Titles that show his relationship to people in authority. Now, my question is, what's Marvin's name? Well, when you get down here, we have it up there already, but it's Marvin, right? What's God's name?
Yahweh.
That's what I want you to see. It's the word Yahweh. That's how it's spelled phonetically, Yahweh, but it's this right here. And so when you used to use checks. When's the last time you wrote a check?
all the time. Right?
You still do? Right now?
I write 3 a year.
Oh, really?
I go to Winco.
All right, so we all know how to write a check. I wrote one today. It's like, how do I do this? I forgot. Now, can you put, when you put, fill out to who it is, to Marvin Stadley, you know, $100,000, and can I put where my name goes, just put a human? No, can I put friend? Can I go preacher? What do I have to put?
Jack Haver.
Jack Haver, why that?
What's your name?
It's not just my name, it's my covenant name. It's my legal name, and when I signed it, it's binding me to this check. I am agreeing to pay out this much money to him. If I don't have that money in the bank and I write a check, I can go to jail, right? It's legal name, and so when God uses his covenant name, this is what's exciting. He's binding himself to us. When thus saith the Lord, now, who's reading the New American Standard here?
I got the New American Standard.
All right. The New American Standard, when you see the word Yahweh, they translate it, or you know, they put it in the New American Standard, not L-O-R-D, they put an L, small capital O, small capital R, small capital D. And that's their way of symbolizing Yahweh. So anytime in the New American Standard you see Lord in small caps, it's Yahweh. Okay? Now, Lord just means master. This refers to his covenant name. Now, I'm not sure how the ESV or the New King James does. We can look at that later. Now, the reason I'm spending this time on is because Isaiah, anytime you have the A-H in his name, that is a reference to God himself. Now, it's interesting. I've read, and there's no way you can prove this, that only people of royal descent used names that had God's covenant name in it. All right? So the suggestion is Isaiah was a son of, or a grandson or a nephew, somehow related to one of the kings of Israel. Right? Could be not. I don't know. But that's not important. What I want you to remember, because we're going to keep going back to it, his name means salvation is the Lord, or the Lord is salvation, or salvation comes from the Lord, or Jehovah saves. And that's really what Isaiah is about. Don't trust in anything else. Trust in Jehovah, because he's the only one that can save you. Because they're a country, like the United States, they're going to have enemies that are going to be attacking them. And just like countries do, what do they do when they're being attacked by someone bigger than self? What do? Huh?
Look for help.
Look for help and make treaties with other nations. And Israel did that over and over, and God said, don't do that. Because salvation comes from who? The me. Don't make treaties with them. But we're going to see throughout here that they did it over and over and over. And when you make a treaty with someone else, all of a sudden you start adopting their culture. Yes?
Seems to me the American standard, not the new one, does it use Jehovah?
It actually uses Jehovah.
And why don't more? I mean,
good question.
What do you think?
I don't know.
New American standard.
I don't know.
At least.
That's a good question. All right? So, that's what the word means. Isaiah's name means. It means salvation of Jehovah, or Jehovah saves. Now, all these trial runs. I don't know where my clicker is. It's interesting. The word Lord of Hosts is used 62 times in the book of Isaiah. Now, I'm drawing that attention to you because when something's used 62 times, what does that tell you?
It's fairly important.
It's important. All right? Now, when we see this phrase, Lord of Hosts, you have to understand it because it's going to help us understand the theme of the book of Isaiah. Because here we have ourselves on the earth. And so here's Marvin, and here's... Well, Sue's not here, but we'll put a dress on her. Here's Heather, right? I'll get you all in here. Okay. There's Phoebe, and then there's Barbara, all right? Good. Now, here's where the birds fly. What do we call that heaven, you know? The Hebrews had a number for it.
First.
That was the first heaven where the birds fly. Right? Then the atmosphere ends, and this is where the stars are. You know what they call that heaven?
Second.
The second heaven. And then there's another line above that, where the universe ends. Of course, it doesn't end. It just keeps expanding. But there's another realm, and they called it the third heaven.
Now, is that the Bible that way? Or is it just what we came up with?
Yeah. Paul said, I was taken up into the third heaven. And what does that mean? Well, he wasn't taken up where the birds fly, because we fly there in planes, right? It wasn't where the stars are, or the moon, and Saturn, and Jupiter, and all the planets and galaxies, because we can go there too. The third heaven is a spiritual realm. It's the real realm where everything really goes on, and we're just, you know, just this little... If you drew a picture of the whole spiritual realm, here's the earth and all the universe. It's just this little, here's where it's all happening in the spiritual realm. Now, what lives up here in the spiritual realm? Yahweh, or God. Who else? Of course, Jesus. Who else?
Angels.
All the angels. How many are there? Millions of angels, right? We'll be introduced to some of them. What else is up there? Okay, all the people that have died, their bodies in the grave, and their spirits go into the... Well, I can't draw a body. Their spirits are up here, aren't they? Both the wicked and the righteous. And who else is up there? In the spiritual realm. Don't think heaven like the paradise. Think the heavens. Heavenly, huh?
Satan.
The devil's up there. And does he have angels?
Yes.
Right.
Can we conclude that the devil can also be in heaven and on the earth? Because it's just always a given, right? Because we know that he's on the earth tempting,
right.
But
right. He's
omnipresent like God.
Right. Well, yeah, we'll try to talk about that later. But yes, there is to some degree that he's in both places. Because this isn't a physical realm. Because if it's spiritual, how can it be physical? Physical, we have dimensions, right? It doesn't have dimensions. So, well, how do you describe it? I don't know. But does it exist? Yes. So, when we're talking about the third heaven, we're not talking about heaven, paradise. We're talking about the realm of the spiritual place, right? Now, some of these angels are archangels. And some of these angels of Satan, they're down here always trying to affect what's going on the earth politically, and you individually, nations and countries and even churches. And we'll find that in the book of Daniel, that Michael the archangel said to Daniel, I would have been here sooner, but I was fighting the prince of Persia, and I got delayed. Well, Persia is a country, a nation. What do you mean you're fighting with? Well, these archangels deal with other powers that are behind these nations. And he's like, I don't understand this. This boggles your mind. Well, I don't understand it either. Have you ever heard of
Huh? I said they're awfully busy. They're busy, now.
Yeah. Because how many nation states are there in the world? You know, hundreds, right? Look at the Olympics as they march in. Have you ever heard Jesus refer to your angel is in the presence of God? And it's the closest understanding we have of a guardian angel. When he talks about the little ones, their angels are in the presence of God.
Well, the angels took care of them in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Yeah. But I think there's real credence, the idea you have angels looking over you, especially if you're one of the saved, the elect. There's angels. Now, how powerful is an angel? Well, we're going to see in the book of Isaiah, one killed 186,000 people in one night.
Wow.
No, 86,000, excuse me. One angel. That's coming up in Isaiah. Now, who is in charge of all this realm? And if you're in charge of this realm, are you in charge of this realm where all the stars are? And if you're in charge of that realm, are you in charge of this realm? Who is it? The Lord of hosts. The host word means the innumerable armies, all the powers that be. Powers in heaven, powers on the earth, and everything in between. Who's in charge of all of them? The Lord of hosts. And that's why you trust in him and no one else. When we're done studying this book, you're going to have appreciation for God like perhaps you haven't had before. Your faith will grow. You're going to trust him more and realize, I got nothing to worry. He's in charge. And I'm going to look to him for salvation. You know, politically, financially, health, but mostly spiritually. And it's exciting because Isaiah is called the gospel in the Old Testament. It shows how by faith we're going to be saved if we just trust in God. It's called, it's interesting, when we look at an outline, there's 66 chapters in Isaiah, right? There's a break at chapter 39, and we're going to look at that. That's this judgment. And then we're going to see after that, there's the next section, chapter 40 through 66. It's a section of comfort where God's going to deliver. Now, I'm just going to ask you, you already know, how many? Here's 39 chapters, the first half of the book of Isaiah. How many chapters in the Old Testament?
39.
How many does that leave over? If there's 66 altogether.
27.
How many are in the New Testament? 27. How many books are in the whole Bible?
66.
How many chapters in Isaiah?
66.
Now, is that coincidence?
That's what I'm asking.
It's interesting. All right?
I like it. That's... Someone mentioned that the Bible is Route 66 in USA.
Yeah. They say, again, the book of Isaiah is the Bible condensed. It's going to show you all the problems with man, the solution, and Christ. It's going to have promises of coming Christ. It's good. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful. That's why I'm excited to share it with you. And most of all, just to study for myself, because it's what it'll do for me. All right? So, Lord of hosts, we'll look for that. Who's in charge? Jehovah, because Jehovah saves. And then we see the Holy One of Israel. This is what's exciting. Because here the Lord of all the commander of all these angelic powers and forces and stars and everything physical. He's in charge of all of them. Now you down the earth. Here's the Mediterranean Sea, right? Here's this little strip of land called what?
Israel.
Sea of Galilee, and there's the Dead Sea. It's teeny compared to the rest of the world, isn't it? And here he has the Israelites, or the children of Israel, and God says, the one, the Lord of hosts, he says, what does it say? I'm the Holy One of Israel. It's used 25 times. In other words, who does he belong to? Who belongs to him? Out of all these angelic beings, all these things, who's the only one that belongs to him? Israel. Now that's important because it shows who he protects and takes care of and who he's fond of and he has affection for. And who are we in the church but his Israel today? That's what's beautiful, the same thing. Of all these powers, he's the Holy One of Israel. And I want you to go away with realizing that too, that he is your Holy One. And that's why you have nothing to fear, because he's in charge of me in my life. He's going to protect me. All right.
Has everybody else in the world kind of turned away from him in one way or the other? Or is...
From God?
Yeah. Or are they just totally special?
Well, everyone's turned away from him. Even Israel turned from him. And we're going to see in the book of Isaiah... That's what Isaiah's warned him. They said, judgment's coming, because you've turned away from God. Mm-hmm. Right. Exactly. And then they ultimately turned away from when they killed his son. And that's where we see the new dispensation with the church. Now it's his special people. All right. This is all important just for the introduction, okay? We don't know much about Isaiah himself. He's mentioned the son of Amoz. That's in chapter 1, chapter 2, and chapter 13. He had two sons, so he was married. His sons are given interesting names. Shirah, Jazub, the remnant shall return. It's interesting. God would use prophets, and he would name their children to make a message. Because we're going to see Israel's going to go into captivity, and a remnant will come back. What does a remnant mean? What's a remnant?
It's what's left over.
Just a little leftover piece. So a large group will go down, but just a few will come back.
Jack, in the Old Testament, did God always name the prophets of the children? Was that
not always, but in some cases they did. Like Joseph's kids meant something too. The second one is Maher Salah Hashbaz. It speeds while booty hastens. You go, what does that mean? We'll talk about it when we get over there, okay? Tradition, when I say tradition, is this biblical now?
No.
But from Jewish tradition, says he was sawn in two when he died, and tradition even goes on to say a tree swallowed him up, so they had to saw the tree in two to kill him. Now that's kind of bizarre and wild, but that's what it says. You might hear that. But at least most people acknowledge he was sawn in two, and he died a martyr's death. All right? So with that being said, Isaiah is part of the major prophets. Now, if you go over here and look at your library, there's five books of law. What are they?
Genesis,
Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. Then you have books of history, and there's 12. And this is the history of the Israelites. Then you have the books of poetry, there's 5. But then there's 17 books of prophecy. And these prophets spoke to the Israelites during this time of history. But they come after. They should be actually inside here, chronologically. You understand what I'm saying? And they're divided into two groups, the major prophets and the
minor.
Now, why are the major ones called major? Because they're more important?
They cover more time.
Okay. That's close. The only reason they're called the major is because they're bigger books.
Oh, okay.
Isaiah 66, Jeremiah, oops, it's going to be recorded so I have it right. I'm going to say 60. Ezekiel and Daniel are bigger books. But Amos, Joel, Micah, Hosea, 6 chapters, 4 chapters. They're little books, less important? No. But they're shorter, so they're called minor. So when you hear the word major, Isaiah is one of the 5 major prophets. It's Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. That's 4. How come there's 5 books? What's the 5th one?
Lamentations,
which was written by Jeremiah. So these are called the 5 major books of prophecy, all right? Only because they're bigger. That's the only reason.
Is Isaiah the first prophet then?
No. No, but he's the first one in this chronologically in your Bible, all right? So we learned a little bit about that. Not as any more important, but Isaiah is just a beautiful book. So if I were to ask you, when did all these prophets live, what would the answer be?
Look into the history.
In the history right here. Of 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings. Okay?
Obviously.
1 and 2 Chronicles.
They overlap.
Yeah, they live during this time period, but their writings are separate, okay? Even though you'll see them mentioned in these books, and some of their prophecies are in these books, okay? We're just looking at Isaiah himself. Now, in the middle of it, we're going to learn some stuff about Hezekiah that's also in the books of history. It's just a repeat. He probably prophesied for almost 60 years, from 740 B.C., to 685. Now, we're all comfortable with B.C., right?
Before Christ.
Oh, right. So, when we draw a timeline, here's Jesus, and he died in what year?
33.
That means he was born, hopefully at 0, but actually he was born at 6 B.C., but I won't go on that. But his birth is 0. So everything after his birth is AD, which means in the year of our Lord, right? Everything this way, the numbers get bigger. 1, 2, 3, right? 4, and then 600, and then what is the first one? 740 BC. 740 years before Christ was born. And the numbers get smaller as time goes on, correct? So we're all comfortable with that. So that's why he started at 740 and he ended in 685. Because we're getting closer to the time of Christ. About 60 years. That's a long time to be prophesying and working with the children of Israel. All right? Notice chapter 1, verse 1. Who wants to read that? Go ahead.
Vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah.
Now that sets the time frame for it. Okay? He prophesied during the reign of 4 different kings. That's like someone saying, hey Jack, how long have you been preaching? Well, I started preaching when Clinton was around. And then Bush, and then Obama, and now Trump, during their presidencies. Would you know what years those are? Because you can look it up and, oh, Clinton, you know, was president. That's what they're doing here. Now, all we have to do is find out, when did Uzziah become king? So here you have this chart coming up. But here I want you to see this, because you have to understand it. There's some historical periods that took place in the Bible, and if we go all the way back to the beginning, where God created the heavens, the earth, and Adam was on the earth, we have Adam, what? Noah, who else? Abraham, right? This is the area, the time of the patriarchs. What does patriarch mean?
Father.
This is the period, the biblical period of the fathers, where God talked to the fathers of a family individually, because God appeared to Noah. God talked to Abraham. It's amazing. And that's why it's called the age of the patriarchs. Now that ended when the nation of Israel was born, and that's where you have the next age, and it's called the age of, well, here he calls it the Exodus, but that's where they come up out of Egypt, right? And that's about 1400 BC, before Christ. That's how far back we're going, right? And then we have the period of the judges. Now, what is that about? Someone help me. The period of the judges.
Was Joshua one of the judges?
No.
He was never a judge, okay.
Samuel, Gideon.
Okay.
They
were some of the judges. So explain, why were there judges?
Because no people wanted at that time.
No, the people didn't want one. Okay, so they've taken over
the kings.
They're in the land of Palestine, right? Israel and Canaan, correct? And who is the Lord of Israel, the God of Israel?
Jehovah.
Do they have a king?
No.
But when there's a problem and they needed a national leader, God would raise up a judge. And when the problem was over, the judge would go away. And there was 13 judges. But then, at the end of that period, the people said, we want a
king.
That's when Samuel, as you said, no, we got a king. It's Jehovah, the Holy One of Israel, remember? You don't need a king. And so, no, we want one anyway. So now we're in the period of what's called the period of the monarchy, where you have kings that are ruling over Israel. And who was the very first king?
Saul.
All right? Did he turn out?
No.
He was succeeded by who? David. And then David died, and who was the next king?
Solomon,
his son. So you initially have Saul, David, Solomon, and it's a united kingdom. But when Solomon died, his son Jeroboam, get Jeroboam and Rehoboam mixed up, took over. And he decided, by the advice of his young men, your dad was a good king, but you're going to be tougher, and you're going to tax the people even heavier to let them know who's really in charge. So he imposed a heavy tax on Israel. And the northern tribe said, we're done with this. And it split the kingdom. And so at that time, the kingdom of Israel split into 10 tribes to the north. And they kept the name Israel. And then there was 2 southern tribes, and they were named Judah. Okay, and I'll show you why, okay? That's still, and we have a series now of kings. Some kings over Israel. And then kings over Judah. And you'll read about them in 1st and 2nd Kings. That makes sense, right? And it's during this time period that Isaiah comes and prophesies. Okay? And it's this divided kingdom during this monarchy. Now, go ahead. I'm sorry?
He preached to Israel as well.
He primarily preached to Judah. Isaiah did, the 2 southern tribes. Now, Israel got so involved in idolatry, God said, that's it. They went into captivity in 721 or 722 BC, before Christ came. Right?
You
want to
hear the
bell? Is it time,
Jeff? No, not yet. I got 7 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. All right.
They just disappear. But God said, Isaiah said to Judah, that's going to happen to you too if you don't repent and turn away from your idolatry. They didn't listen. And you know why they got caught up in this? This is striking. It's because during some of this time period, it was the golden years of this kingdom. They were rich, 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 wealthy, wealthy, wealthy.
So,
and what happens when people are wealthy?
Forget about the Lord.
Yeah.
They forget about the God who saves. And they don't need him because they're taken care of by their own wealth.
So Judges was a book of them. So that was way before this time.
Right. The book of Joshua and Judges talks about this period right here.
Okay.
Have 5 minutes, so we're good. So we're in the period of the kings now.
Uh-huh. I was just thinking that in the book of Judges, it's this process. They're rich and poor and rich
yes.
and poor.
Now, Judah is going to go into captivity in Babylon for 70 years, and a remnant will return. Remember, one of his sons was named what? A remnant. Okay? So we're going to talk about these things before they happen. Now, that's the time period we're in, right here when Isaiah preaches. Now, they return, they rebuild Jerusalem, then there's a quiet period where God doesn't speak. That's the period between Malachi and Matthew. We call it the period between the Testaments. Malachi is the last book in the Old Testament. The first book in the New is what? First book in the New Testament?
Matthew.
How many years of silence where God didn't send a prophet?
400 years.
400 BC to the time Christ was born. God didn't talk. Who's the next prophet that shows up?
Jesus.
No?
John the Baptist.
Elijah. John the Baptist. That's right. John the Baptist. Preparing the way. Then you have the last period. Of course, that's where we're at. Now, here's the map. Here's the two southern tribes. Judah was a tribe of Israel. There's 12 tribes, right? But they were a large territory. And there's also Benjamin is another tribe here. But so they named the two southern tribes after the largest one. So this is always referred to as Judah. So from now on in class, when I say, and Judah, I'm talking about the nation is split, right? Israel split. And we're talking about the two southern tribes. Now, Isaiah and Micah were the prophets sent to these two tribes. Now, the northern tribes, you can list them. You know, what are they? Well, they're all the rest. And they keep the name Israel. So when we refer to Israel, we're talking about the northern tribes, not the two southern ones. Now this is where it's tricky. Sometimes God uses Israel to refer to all of them still. And we'll make that distinction when we see it. But from now on, when you hear the word Israel, we're talking about the northern tribes, not the southern two.
So yes? when Jerusalem was destroyed in 70 B.C., what tribe was it then? Was it all of them or just
all of these are taken to Syrian captivity in 722. They're gone.
Okay,
they just disappear. There's stragglers left behind. And then there's just left Judah. They go into captivity in 605 BC into Babylon. In 70 years, they come back.
So they're the ones.
They're the ones that were around when Jesus. They're just a remnant come back. Now, here's what happened. Jerusalem is where you're supposed to worship, right? What was there?
Temple.
The temple. Where do you have to worship? Every year, every Jew had to go to?
Jerusalem.
Well, when they split, they said, we don't want people going to Jerusalem. So Israel set up two places of worship, and they set up golden calves. Remember when they were up on the Mount Sinai, Moses was? What'd they do down there? As soon as they came out of captivity, they built a... Now they're doing the same thing. They set one up at Bethel and one all the way up north at Dan. And you can go up there and they've uncovered the site where they had the golden calf at Dan. I've been there. And people would go there to worship because they didn't want them going down here and reuniting with their brethren. So this is idolatry, isn't it? Set up golden calves, two of them. And that's where they became so corrupt and so immoral that God sends them into captivity. Now, that's what's going on politically, and they are doing the same thing because Syria, which is right to the north, the same Syria that we read about in the news today, they teamed up with Israel, and they're going to attack Judah. And Judah goes, what shall we do? And Isaiah says, trust in the Lord. I'll take care of you. Finally, Assyria comes taking them out and wants to take Judah next. And we have this wonderful thing where Hezekiah spreads this letter out before God because Sennacherib says, surrender, I'm going to destroy you. We'll read about that. It's exciting. But the message is what? Trust in the Lord. And they're delivered. So there's where it is. Now, here's Assyria. They're a major country. They own all of this, all the way from the Tigris River, all the way down into Egypt, or into Egypt down here. I love our class because we can go just a couple minutes longer. Is that okay? We're just going to miss, the invitation. Now, here you have this chart. I want you to see it. That one. See the red here? That's the southern kingdom. Those are the kings in order. Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, Hezekiah, then Zedekiah. See the northern kingdom in the yellow? We have Pekah and Hoshea, and then they end. Why do they end? Why does the yellow come to an end? Right here.
Because they went into captivity.
This is where they go into captivity, right here. Over in the Assyrian Empire. Mm-hmm. Now, here is where Isaiah writes. See the gray? Mm-hmm. The gray period up here? This is the period in which he is living and writing, from about 740 to 686 B.C. This whole gray period, for those four kings, because you read it, didn't you, Linda? These four kings, Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Now, Judah goes into captivity right here, 606. See that spot right here? Barbara right here is where they go into captivity. And they come back. All right. Now here's the 400 years of silence right here where God doesn't talk at all. Of course, Jesus comes right down here. I want you to see that chart so you can see where we are. Okay, we're about done. We'll talk about this next time as we start. But I just want to show you, this is such a beautiful, it's like poetry.
Interesting.
This Isaiah is like poetry. He'll use language like this. Come, let us reason together. We're going to have the Song of the Vineyard. Isaiah's call in chapter 6 is beautiful. If you could read through chapter 12 next week, it'd really be nice. In chapter 9, unto us a child was born. Who do you think that's speaking of?
Christmas time.
No, it's a prophecy of the coming Jesus, right? The peace of the Messiah rises from Jesse's stump. The highway of holiness. The language is just wonderful. Comfort, comfort my people, is what Isaiah says. Woe to him who quarrels with his maker. Do people quarrel with God all the time? Why, God, did you? Woe to the one, all right? By his wounds we are healed. What's that language about? Yeah, Isaiah 53, Jesus. That's right. And then, come, all ye who are thirsty. Isn't that a beautiful language, the invitation of God? Come, you all thirsty. Is this not the kind of fasting I've chosen? And we'll talk about that. And of course, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. That's speaking of Jesus again. All right.
Can you get a copy of that?
No. It's on the website right now.
Okay.
All right? And you can look at it there. So the message about coming judgment, trust me in the Lord, and then the coming Messiah. Okay? Judgment is used 19 times. Woe is used 20 times. Oracles 11 times. There's 14 prophecies against different nations and countries and people. So we're going to look at all those. So it's all about judgment. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jack. Interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, wow.
Since class is over, then, yeah. So why did these Gospels that some people believe in that were after the Old Testament, before the New Testament,